Why mortgage modification is so thorny.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. In a few hours, President Obama will deliver a speech about how his administration can push this recovery along. He has thrown a lot of resources that way, bailouts, stimulus spending, and measures to help homeowners avoid foreclosure. That mortgage help has proven trickier than expected. And today, the House Financial Services Committee is looking into that. Here with the story is Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite, joining us live from New York. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Bill.
Why aren't things working out with the loan modification program?
Well, a lot fewer people than the administration hoped have actually signed up. We've all heard the stories about people trying to call their loan services and just not being able to get through. So that is part of it. But it turns out only 30% of the borrowers in trial payment plans have actually given in all the paperwork they need to qualify for a permanent loan modification.
Why? Why wouldn't people turn in their paperwork?
Well, okay. So one theory is that these forms can be very complicated, confusing. So, you know, filling them in correctly is a bit of a job. But I spoke to University of Maryland business professor Peter Marisi a bit earlier, and he says there's another good reason that this could be happening.
Many of the folks seeking modifications don't have the jobs and incomes necessary to qualify for permanent loans, even under generous terms. Going permanent requires validation of those incomes, and often folks can't deliver.
So when you apply for a permanent modification, you have to give written details about your income, something you didn't have to do to get the temporary modification. You need to submit tax returns and things like that. So it may be that many borrowers know they just don't have the wherewithal, so they're not handing in those forms.
Very interesting. That House Financial Services Committee meeting is today. And that's Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite, live from New York. Thanks, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Now we do the numbers. Stock prices are flopping in Europe this morning. They're down more than 1.5%. They were mostly lower in Asia today as well. Ben Bernanke was a bit of a downer yesterday with his reticent assessment of the recovery. Wall Street prices pretty much didn't budge. The Dow added 1 point and closed at 10,390. Well, there should be plenty to talk about today at the Bank of America board meeting. Last week, the company said it's ready to pay back the $45 billion it borrowed from the government last year. And then there is the little matter of a chief executive. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
With less than 4 weeks until Bank of America's CEO Ken Lewis steps down, a bank spokesman says it's a pretty good bet that his successor will be discussed at today's meeting. That successor has yet to be named.
So the bank has had to do a lot of searching both internally and externally, and from the rumors we've been hearing, it hasn't been going at all well.
Jamie Peters is a banking analyst at Morningstar. She says the repayment of the $45 billion TARP loan will help because the bank will be able to offer its new CEO a better salary.
With the repayment of the $45 billion of TARP, they no longer are going to have that extraordinary aid from the government, which means the Pazar will not be sitting at the table when they discuss a pay package with the new CEO.
Still, Peter says the bank's board faces an unenviable task, finding a CEO who can run the nation's largest bank and navigate the corridors of power in the nation's capital. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing and online surveys. ConstantContact.com. And by Bank of America, 1 year into a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities.
Compared to the rest of the world, the developed world anyway, Americans spend a lot of money on health care, almost 2.5 times the average of other rich countries. And it doesn't necessarily make us healthier. That is the conclusion of a report out this morning from a 30-nation group called the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The head of the OECD's health division is Mark Pearson. Good morning, Mark.
Hello.
Why do you conclude there's that disparity in health care spending?
Well, if you spend a lot, it's either because your prices are higher or you're doing more or a bit of both. And in fact, in the United States case, it's a bit of both. Sometimes doing more is a good thing. You have probably the best cancer care in the world. Very high rates of screening. People live longer after they've been diagnosed with cancer. But when you get down to things like treatment of asthma, diabetes, hypertension, really the United States system doesn't perform at all well.
And what was new in this morning's report that stood out to you?
Obviously, I think the spending figures are extremely interesting, the fact that the United States is spending so much and is not really getting what you'd hope to get for its health dollar. You would be hoping with that much spending that you could actually see it in the quality of the healthcare system. Apart from cancer, I think that's quite difficult to do. There's a lot of activity going on, but is it actually delivering health? Not according to our figures.
Now, what happens with this report, Mark?
We don't tell countries how to structure their health system, and we're not going to get involved in the healthcare debate in the United States. That's an issue for Americans to decide. What we do think is that countries can learn from each other. If you can see that some country is doing much better than you at some parts of healthcare, it's worth looking at why. Yes, the US system is rather different from other countries, has much more reliance on private expenditure. But even so, when you look at how countries are making best use of information technology, or how best they're linking local doctors and hospitals and nursing homes in order to have an integrated form of care, I think that's something that the United States can learn from other countries.
Mark Pearson is head of the Health Division at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And finally, what would you have done? Last week, the store manager at a Kmart in Des Moines, Iowa, opened a red tin can that had been sitting on the customer service counter for 4 days. And inside, he found $10,380 in mysterious cash. Would you have handed the can to police as he did? Or would you have called it a tip jar and laundered the cash through Christmas presents? Well done, Kmart manager. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.